You're listening to Abundance. This is Dane Allred. I've learned my listeners love to hear about my problems and how I've decided to deal with them. I have an abundance of funny and interesting things that have happened in my life, and I think my job may be to tell you about them so you feel better about your own life. If nothing else, you may be entertained, and that's a kind of abundance we can all use. Abundance. I am your host, Dane Allred. We're here to focus on the bounty of this universe. We are all millionaires. We have 31 million seconds to spend every year, and I hope you're spending them with an attitude of thanks. I created my list of 1,001 thanks to help me focus on the positive side of life, and I hope you'll be motivated this day to accentuate the positive. Patience, number 715 from my list of 1,001 thanks, is a part of the abundance I celebrate. Our episodes today include practicing patience, harmonious match, unharmonious match, relaxing, all from a funny thing happened on the way to Dane Allred, and you'll hear three letters from Teddy by Elizabeth Bayard, and I'll share the poem Patience Taught by Nature by Elizabeth Barrett Browning. I hope you have the patience to spend the next hour finding out why patience is a part of the abundance of the world I'd like to celebrate today. William Penn said it this way: patience and diligence, like faith, remove mountains. John Quincy Adams agreed with him. He said, patience and perseverance have a magical effect before which difficulties disappear and obstacles vanish. Thomas Huxley had respect for patience. He said, patience and tenacity are worth more than twice their weight of cleverness. And Leo Tolstoy said, the two most powerful warriors are patience and time. Join with me today on Abundance as we use powerful warriors, patience, in the next hour to examine why I am so grateful for patience, even though I am not the most patient person in the world. If anything happened on the way to Dane Allred, practicing patience. This last week I had to be patient, and I'm not really the most patient person in the world. I like to be doing things, and it's hard for me to just sit and wait. I spent about 36 hours over the last 3 days just sitting and waiting. I used the time to write some of these episodes and edit some past programs, but mostly it was just sitting around. That's one of the great things about teaching. If I'm not talking to the class, I could be walking around the class, checking on how the students are doing. There are always papers to score and record, and getting ready for my next class is always lots of work. I need to admit, though, that I am a very bad student. I really can't sit for extended periods of time, especially if I'm supposed to be listening to someone else. I can usually keep myself busy if I need to, but sitting around is not my favorite. I do quite a bit of acting in movies and commercials, and those two activities take a lot of patience. The shooting day is 12 hours long, and you are required to stay in the immediate area. For some commercials I've done, I've waited 10 hours to do a 30-second piece and then had to wait around for a couple more hours. The longest television shoot I've been to lasted 18 hours, and I really didn't do anything for that day for the first 12 hours. Camera work of any kind seems to take forever. The camera is set up, and the set is dressed. The lights are focused and adjusted, and then adjusted some more. I've been a sit-in, and sometimes sit-ins have the cameras focused on them so the real actors can keep studying their lines. And then the lights are adjusted some more. This is all for one shot or one particular view of the scene, and for reverse shots, reaction shots, establishing shots. Just repeat all of this over and over all day long. One of my favorite phrases to hear after working on a scene for what seems forever is, moving on. That means the next scene is about to be set up. For actors, that means go sit somewhere for an hour and we will call you when we're ready. I've been in about 20 movies and probably 30 commercials. The good news about shooting with video or film is that the day usually ends and you don't have to keep doing the same thing day after day. Now, I've also been in about 60 stage productions, which means as an actor you get to go to rehearsal day after day and do the same thing over and over again. Since I'm not a full-time professional stage actor, most of my rehearsals take place at night after a long day at work. My least favorite patience-inducing necessity in stage productions is blocking, which means you stand here and then move here. Then after everyone knows where they're going to stand and where they're going to move, you get to rehearse it a few times. Rehearsals then continue 2, 3, or 4 times a week for a month or 2 or 3. If it's a musical, I get to torture the music director as they try to figure out how to get me to sing the right notes. Then you rehearse the songs a bunch, too. We won't talk about how frustrating I am to choreographers. At the end of the process, the purpose is to make a bunch of people dancing and singing on stage look like everything is happening quite spontaneously. In the end, it is a rewarding process since when the show starts, it is fun to perform. Of course, in most shows, you can't always be on the stage, so there are times when you have to be patient and wait for your next part. I've tried to think of a show where I've had to be the most patient. I think it was probably when I was playing a corpse in The Devil and Daniel Webster. We were the dead jury who had to listen to a trial about Jabez Stone. Daniel Webster was defending him against the devil, and we had to stand and listen to the trial for about 30 minutes. I was standing on a ladder the whole time, and my insteps really hurt by the end of the trial each night. I patiently waited for 30 minutes to say guilty, and then exit the stage and pull the rubber pieces off my face. I was glad we only had to perform this particular show only 3 or 4 times. But all of this practicing has made me more patient. But I still have a way to go. As Benjamin Franklin said, he that can have patience can have what he will. Got patience? You're listening to Abundance. This is Dane Ard, and today we're discussing patience. Next up, Harmonious Match. A funny thing happened on the way to Dane Allred. Harmonious Match. It's sad to watch the dating commercials on television. Everyone has a perfect match, or they are looking for that one person who they can find harmony with and live happily ever after. It seems to me that much of the romance in the world happens by accident, and you just have to be in the right place at the right time and be patient. Helen Reddy said, "There is no magic person out there, no perfect human being out there waiting for you." I agree with her. Sometimes it happens and sometimes it doesn't. Can computer dating find the perfect person for you? A sad statistic was revealed recently, which shows from 20 to 40% of those registered for online dating services were already married. The other sad statistic is that 70% of those who use computers have tried the online dating sites. Maybe they work for some people, but I am too old to know anything about computer dating. I'm from the old school where chance encounters and random events seem to draw two people together. I could have attended three different colleges, but I could only meet my wife at one of them. She also had to stay in school a little longer than usual so I could show up. We happened to be in a live stage musical together and became friends. We were in another show later during the year. We started dating the next summer when we had a class together. Those are so many random events. I don't know. I can say it was fate for us to be together. It just happened to work out. If you're a female and looking to attract that special guy, I have only one piece of serious advice. Don't play coy. Let the guy know you're interested. Pay attention to him. Touch his elbow, his arm, his back. Speaking as a man, we are pretty dense. And unless we are practically hit over the head, we really don't think anyone is interested in us. If you don't believe this little admonition, look around at all those guys you think are great looking arm in arm with a female you think is ugly. It's the only way to explain it. I taught a guy who sat by the same two girls every class. I wondered if there was something serious going on, but the girl I thought would be his first choice lost out to the girl I thought was, honestly, less attractive. How? She let him know she was interested. And once a man knows there's a possibility of a relationship, we are pretty much sunk. Ogden Nash has a saying about marriage and incompatibility. He said, "A little incompatibility is the spice of life, particularly if he has income and she is patable." That quote does give us a nice mental picture, which is to say the rich man and the patable woman. And who is to say that the rich man and the patable woman can't find perfect happiness together? Samuel Rogers has a warning for those who decide to marry. He said, "It doesn't much signify whom one marries, for one is sure to find the next morning that it is someone else." If you don't believe this saying, just talk to anyone who's been together longer than 10 years. We could all change enough in 10 years to become a completely, totally unrecognizable person. My wife put our wedding picture up on the mantle recently, and I asked her to introduce me to the blonde, skinny guy she is next to in the picture. I told her that wasn't me anymore. Luckily, she has adapted to my changes. Or as Nancy Astor said of marriage, "I married beneath me." All women do. Henri de Balzac said it this way, "Marriage is the end of man." It sure was the end of that man, and I was, and I have to tell you, I am a lot happier after 30 years of marriage than I was after being single for the first 20 years. It's like Benjamin Franklin was talking to my wife when he said, "Keep your eyes wide open before marriage and half shut afterwards." I also like what Benjamin Franklin said about husbands. "One good husband is worth two good wives, for the scarcer things are, the more they're valued." I just hope I fit into the good husband category. As Helen Rowland put it, when a girl marries, she exchanges the attentions of many men for the inattention of one. I wish I was more attentive. But you may be more like Mae West. She said, "Marriage is a great institution, but I'm not ready for an institution yet." Maybe you aren't either. This is Abundance, and I am your host, Dana Arid. Today we're talking about patience. And I must admit, I do have the world's most patient wife. This is number 715 from my list of 1,001 thanks. I hope your day is turning out as nice as mine. Welcome to Abundance on KTKK, 6:30 a.m. If you've tuned in today to hear vitriol and hate, this is the wrong program for you. I'm Dan Allred, and as your host on Abundance, we celebrate success and express our gratitude. We should all be excited. We got another day to spin around the sun, and abundance is one of the ways we can show thanks for just one more day, because that's all we ever get, 24 hours at a time. Three Letters from Teddy by Elizabeth Silence Baynard. Teddy's letter came today, and now that I've read it, I will place it in my cedar chest with the other things that are important to my life. I wanted you to be the first to know. I smiled as I read the words he had written, and my heart swelled with a pride that I had no right to feel. I've not seen Teddy Stallard since he was a student in my fifth grade class 15 years ago. It was early in my career, and I had only been teaching for 2 years. From the first day he stepped into the classroom, I disliked Teddy. Teachers, although everyone knows differently, are not supposed to have favorites in a class, but most especially they are not to show dislike for a child, any child. Nevertheless, every year there are one or two children that one cannot help but become attached to, for teachers are human, and it is human nature to like bright, pretty, intelligent people, whether they are 10 years old or 25. And sometimes, not too often, fortunately, there will be one or two students to whom the teacher just can't seem to relate. I had thought myself quite capable of handling my personal feelings along that line until Teddy walked into my life. There wasn't a child I particularly liked that year, but Teddy was most assuredly one I disliked. He was dirty, not just occasionally, but all the time. His hair hung over his ears, and he actually had to hold it out of his eyes as he wrote his papers in class, and this was before it was fashionable to do so. Two, he had a peculiar odor about him which I could never identify. His physical faults were many, and his intellect left a lot to be desired also. By the end of the first week, I knew he was hopelessly behind the others. Not only was he behind, he was just plain slow. I began to withdraw from him immediately. Any teacher will tell you that it's more of a pleasure to teach a bright child. It is definitely more rewarding for one's ego. But any teacher worth her credentials can channel work to the bright child, keeping him channeled and learning, while she puts her major efforts on the slower ones. Any teacher can do this. Most teachers do it, but I didn't. Not that year. In fact, I concentrated on my best students and let the others follow along as best they could. Ashamed as I am to admit it, I took a perverse pleasure in using my red pen, and each time I came to Teddy's papers, the cross marks, and there were many, were always a little redder than necessary. "Poor work," I would write with a flourish. While I did not actually ridicule the boy, my attitude was obviously quite apparent to the class, for he quickly became the class goat, the outcast, the unlovable, and the unloved. He knew I didn't like him, but he didn't know why. Nor did I, then or now, why I felt such an intense dislike for him. All I know is that he was a little boy no one cared about, and I made no effort on his behalf. The days rolled by. We made it through the fall festival and the Thanksgiving holidays, and I continued marking happily with my red pen. As Christmas holidays approached, I knew that Teddy would never catch up in time to be promoted to the sixth grade level. He would be a repeater. To justify myself, I went to his cumulative folder and from time to time looked it over. He had very low grades for the first 4 years, but not grade failure. How he had made it, I did not know. I closed my mind to the personal remarks. First grade. Teddy shows promise by work and attitude, but has a poor home situation. Second grade. Teddy could do better. Mother terminally ill. He receives little help at home. Third grade. Teddy is a pleasant boy, helpful, but too serious. Slow learner. Mother passed away at the end of the year. Fourth grade. Very slow, but well-behaved. Father shows little or no interest. Well, they passed him 4 times, but he will certainly repeat the fifth grade. Do him good, I said to myself. And then the last day before Christmas holidays arrived. Our little tree on the reading table sported paper and popcorn chains. Many gifts were heaped underneath waiting for the big moment. Teachers always get several gifts at Christmas, but mine that year seemed bigger and more elaborate than ever. There was not a student who had not brought one. There was not a student who had not brought me one. Each unwrapping brought squeals of delight, and the proud giver would receive effusive thank yous. Teddy's gift wasn't the last one I picked up. In fact, it was in the middle of the pile. Its wrapping was a brown paper bag, and he had colored Christmas trees and red bells all over it. It was stuck together with masking tape. "For Miss Thompson, from Teddy," it read. The group was completely silent, and for the first time I felt conspicuous, embarrassed because they all stood watching me unwrap that gift. As I removed the last bit of masking tape, two items fell to my desk. A gaudy rhinestone bracelet with several stones missing and a small bottle of dime store cologne, half empty. I could hear the snickers and whispers, and I wasn't sure I could look at Teddy. "Isn't it lovely?" I said, placing the bracelet on my wrist. "Teddy, would you help me fasten it?" He smiled shyly as he fixed the clasp, and I held my wrist for all of them to admire. There were a few hesitant oohs and ahs, but as I dabbed the cologne behind my ears, all the little girls lined up for a dab behind their ears. I continued to open the gifts until I reached the bottom of the pile. We ate our refreshments, and then the bell rang. The children filed out with shouts of "See you next year" and "Merry Christmas." But Teddy waited at his desk. When they had all left, he walked toward me, clutching his gift and books to his chest. "You smell just like Mom," he said softly. "Her bracelet looks real pretty on you, too. I'm glad you liked it." He left quickly. I locked the door, sat down at my desk, and wept, resolving to make up to Teddy what I had deliberately deprived him of, a teacher who cared. I stayed every afternoon with Teddy from the end of Christmas holiday until the last day of school. Sometimes we worked together. Sometimes he worked alone while I drew up lesson plans or graded papers. Slowly but surely, he caught up with the rest of the class. Gradually, there was a definite upward curve in his grades. He did not have to repeat the fifth grade. In fact, his final averages were among the highest in the class, and although I knew he would be moving out of state when school was out, I was not worried for him. Teddy had reached a level that would stand him in good stead the following year, no matter where he went. He had enjoyed a good measure of success, and as we were taught in our teacher training course, success builds success. I did not hear from Teddy until 7 years later when his first letter appeared in my mailbox. "Dear Miss Thompson, I just wanted you to be the first to know I will be graduating second in my class next month. Very truly yours, Teddy Stollard." I sent him a card of congratulations in a small package, a pen and pencil gift set. I wondered what he would do after graduation. 4 years later, Teddy's second letter came. "Dear Miss Thompson, I wanted you to be the first to know. I was just informed I'll be graduating first in my class. The university has not been easy, but I liked it. Very truly yours, Teddy Stollard." I sent him a good pair of sterling silver monogrammed cufflinks and a card. "So proud of you," I could burst. And now today, Teddy's last letter. "Dear Miss Thompson, I wanted you to be the first to know. As of today, I am Theodore J. Stollard, M.D. How about that? I'm going to be married in July, the 22nd to be exact. I wanted to ask you if you would come and sit where Mom would sit if she were here. I will have no family there as Dad died last year. Very truly yours, Teddy Stollard." I'm not sure what kind of card one sends to a doctor on completion of medical school and professional boards. Maybe I'll just wait and take a wedding gift, but my congratulations can't wait. Dear Ted, congratulations. You made it, and you did it yourself. In spite of those like me, and because of us, the day has finally come for you. God bless you. I'll be at that wedding with bells on. Miss Thompson. Patience Taught by Nature by Elizabeth Barrett Browning. Oh, dreary life, we cry. Oh, dreary life. And still the generations of the birds sing through our sighing, and the flocks and herds serenely live while we are keeping strife with heaven's true purpose in us, as a knife against which we may struggle. Ocean girds, unslackened the dry land, savanna swards, unweary sweep, hills watch, unworn, and rife meek leaves drop yearly from the forest trees to show, above, the unwasted stars that pass in their old glory. O thou God of old, grant me some smaller grace than comes to these, but so much patience as a blade of grass grows by, contented through the heat and cold. This is Dane Allred. You've been listening to Abundance, a program where we find 1,001 ways to say thank you. I'm so thankful for the good works of those people who wrote those last two pieces. This is KTKK AM 630, and for crystal clear reception on your computer, go to www.k-talk.com and click on the yellow Listen Now Starburst. Today we've been expressing our thanks for patience, number 715 on my list of 1,001 thanks. Abundance is brought to you every Sunday night from 7 to 8 p.m. on KTKK AM 630. And these programs are also available at my website, daneallred.com. That's daneallred.com. Or just type my name, Dane Allred, into a browser. These podcasts are also available at daneallred.podbean.com. And the blog version is at 1001thanks.blogspot.com. The podcasts and the blogs are available 24/7, but I would be remiss if I didn't express my appreciation for you listening today. This is Abundance, a program of 1,001 thanks. I am your host, Dane Allred. I believe you can change your life and the world by celebrating the joy, the happiness, and the positive parts of this wonderful journey we call life. You're listening to Abundance on KTKK AM 630. It's 40 minutes past the hour. A funny thing happened on the way to Dane Allred. Unharmonious match. In the play Our Town, the narrator says most people go to the graves two by two. But there are some who are not meant to stay together. The bliss of early love wears off, and to prevent a murder, the couple separates. My mother doesn't like me to tell this story, but it will serve as an illustration that some people are better off apart. My mother divorced my father when I was 10. She's been married twice more, and I need to say she is very happy at this point in her life, and I'm happy to have an excellent stepfather. I've had a couple. But Dad has pursued the legal route to polygamy by marrying and divorcing several times. My sister and I think the count is up to 15 marriages and 14 divorces, but some of these are to the same person. When I harassed my mom about this, she was not very happy. I told her between my two parents, that was almost 20 marriages. With a divorce rate at 50%, I continued, that means 40 couples have had to stay married so you guys could get divorced. Like I said, she was not very happy with me, and I hope she doesn't hear this on the air. But there are many people who agree an amicable parting is probably best. Here are some of our most famous writers with their mostly negative views on marriage. Anton Chekhov said, if you are afraid of loneliness, do not marry. Benjamin Disraeli said, every woman should marry, and no man. Sydney Smith said of marriage, marriage resembles a pair of shears, so joined that they cannot be separated, often moving in opposite directions, yet always punishing everyone who comes between them. This quote by Socrates may surprise you. He said, by all means marry. If you get a good wife, you'll become happy. If you get a bad one, you'll become a philosopher. Socrates also said this about marriage, call no man unhappy until he is married. Herbert Spencer said, marriage, a ceremony in which rings are put on the finger of the lady and through the nose of the gentleman. Stephen Butler Leacock said this of marriage, many a man in love with a dimple makes the mistake of marrying the whole girl. Edward Verrill Lucas said, the trouble with marriage is that while every woman is at heart a mother, every man is at heart a bachelor. Helen Rowland has a couple of great quotes about marriage. She said, in olden times, sacrifices were made at the altar, a custom which is still continued. And she also said, when you see a married couple walking down the street, the one who is two or three steps ahead is the one who's mad. George Bernard Shaw tells us it's a woman's business to get married as soon as possible and a man's to keep unmarried as long as he can. Here's some good advice from William Makepeace Thackeray. Remember, it is as easy to marry a rich woman as a poor one. Artemus Ward said, he is dreadfully married. He's the most married man I ever saw in my life. Zsa-Zsa Gabor is an expert on marriage. She's been married 9 times and she said, a man in love is incomplete until he has married. Then he's finished. Speaking of divorce, some of our more expert celebrities have weighed in, including Zsa-Zsa Gabor. She said, he taught me housekeeping. When I divorce, I keep the house. I'm not sure who Sancha Guitry is, but I like the quote, when a man steals your wife, there is no better revenge than to let him keep her. Ken Hubbard said, nobody works as hard for money as the man who marries it. And Carolyn Wells understands divorce. She said, the wages of sin is alimony. Oscar Wilde said, divorces are made in heaven. Arthur Baer said, alimony is like buying oats for a dead horse. And finally, John Barrymore said of alimony, you never realize how short a month is until you pay alimony. It really does seem some people can't stay married, and psychologists tell us many people continue to marry the same kind of person they just divorced. With a divorce rate of 50%, maybe we should just shuffle the deck and move down the road. You move next door, and the guy there moves down to the next house. It makes me think arranged marriages might not be so bad. If you didn't like who was chosen, you could divorce, and the rate might still be 50%. Maybe you'd do better choosing on your own later if someone chose for you first. Couldn't turn out much worse. If you are married, I hope that you are happily married as I am. Samuel Taylor Coleridge thought this: the happiest marriage I can picture would be the union of a deaf man to a blind woman. This is Dane Allred. You're listening to Abundance. I am married to the world's most patient woman. And she is blind to many of my faults, and I appreciate that. The funny thing happened on the way to Dane Allred. Relaxing. Patience is different than relaxing. When we vacation, we do so we can do nothing and call it relaxing. When we're on a vacation, we can develop lots of patience. Sitting on a beach for hours on end is helping us unwind, when usually we can't stand waiting in a doctor's office for more than 10 minutes. An interesting way to develop more patience is to compare waiting to relaxing. Mostly when we are impatient, it's because something we can't control seems to be wasting our time. One of my proudest moments was when I broke my leg and had to wait in the emergency room for about 6 hours. It was an opportunity to practice patience, and there really wasn't anything I could do about it but take a deep breath and relax. There had been a terrible accident on the freeway, and the emergency personnel had to take care of those people first. I just had a broken leg, and while it hurt, I was in much better shape than anyone else who showed up that day. So I had a choice. I got out some old crossword puzzles and worked on them. I read the newspapers, and I read some magazines. I probably could have slept, but I have never really been able to sleep in the hospital, much less the emergency room. There's just too much going on in there to rest. So as I passed the time, I knew those who needed the help were getting it, and eventually I would be seen. It was an interesting chance to try and relax while I had to wait. Even when I'm stuck in a long line at a store, I try to change my perspective and use the opportunity to really notice the abundance around me. There are thousands of products in most retail places, and I rarely take the time to examine the price, the purpose, and other details of products. There are some really interesting magazines at the checkout stand, which I would never buy, but it's fun to flip a few pages in and read the latest gossip. As an actor, I get the chance to play all kinds of characters. In the past year alone, I've played an abusive alcoholic father in one film, a church official in another, a cop in a third film, and a ventriloquist and a dead baker in a stage play. So I like to look around and study the people I see. This is a technique used by the famous Russian acting teacher Stanislavski. Looking around and observing people gives me the chance to integrate some of the behaviors, speech patterns, and body postures I see all around me. It can give us a chance to see the variety of life which is lived by others. We tend to think our lifestyle is how everyone else lives, and if we step outside ourselves for a moment, we will truly understand how our lives might not be so miserable as we think. We may find out we have a pretty good life after all, or as Jimmy Stewart is told by Clarence the Angel, "You know, you really had a wonderful life." I'll be the first to admit I'm not the most patient person in the world, and as a teacher, I am the worst student in the world. I'll get a chance to behave tomorrow as I attend a workshop, but I'll probably get up and wander just because I know there are so many interesting things to see in the classroom besides the front of the room and the instructor. When are we most patient? Well, if you're getting a massage, it's easy to be patient and want to spend more time getting relaxed as our muscles are manipulated. When some people play video games, they don't relax, but they are very patient while they try to get a new high score. They can pass hours patiently trying to beat the machine, and most of us are guilty of the same thing in front of the television. We can sit patiently for hours while our favorite programs play in between the hundreds of commercials. If we're engaged in a hobby, time passes so swiftly we wonder where it went. If you are reading a good book, you can emerge from the pages hours later wondering how time can fly so fast. If you are doing something creative or spending time in recreational activities, you'll notice time flying, and not like the alarm clock you fling across the room when you want to sleep in. For me, when I am skiing, windsurfing, gardening, or building something from wood scraps, the time speeds up and vanishes. We know that time is passing at exactly the same rate. How we enjoy these seconds, minutes, and hours may only depend on our practice of patience. This is Abundance. Today we're discussing patience, number 715 from my list of 1,001 thanks. I am your host, Dane Allred. And I've had a chance to practice patience this week as part of my garage blew away in 100 mile an hour wind. I'm still dealing pretty well with it. You're listening to Abundance, and this week we're focusing on patience, number 715 from my list of 1,001 thanks. I'm here today to talk about my adventures and some prizes I've encountered. I call these installments A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to Dane Allred, and they are available at daneallred.podbean.com as a podcast and 1,001thanks.blogspot.com. Are you a glasses half empty kind of a person, or is the glass half full? On Abundance, we pause to consider all the wonderful blessings of a world where many diseases have been eliminated, where we are more connected than ever before, and where the abundance of life is evident at every turn. Listen to Abundance every Sunday from 7 to 8 p.m. Mountain Standard Time right here on KTKK AM 630. We'll discuss the 1,001 things I'm thankful for from my list of 1,001 thanks. You may find your attitude changing from one of shortage, scarcity, and insufficiency to one of abundance. You may become a my glass is overflowing kind of person. That's Abundance every Sunday here on KTKK.